Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by LegalZoom. LegalZoom's helped more than a million people with DBAs, LLCs, incorporation, and more. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout for special savings. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/allaboutandroid. Welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode 317. Wow. Recorded on Tuesday, May 9th, 2017. We're your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I am a year older.
Year older. Happy birthday to Flo. How you doing, Flo?
I'm okay. I ended up getting sick on my birthday.
But
we're okay enough now.
Too much partying.
Ginger ale.
Too much partying.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah? No. Maybe not. I'm so sorry. There's nothing worse than getting sick on your birthday.
Seriously, makes for a really fun story, though. Come on.
I suppose so. Well, I'm just amazed that you're still here. I mean, Ron didn't get sick, and he's off partying, basically.
Well, he is. I mean, the Mets.
There he is. That's actually Ron. He sent this along saying, missing AAA and happy birthday, Flo.
So Ron's the best.
You go. happy birthday to Ron as well. He's watching the Mets. You decided to show up here, and we're happy to have you, Flo. I'm sorry that you're not feeling so hot.
I'm feeling good enough to be here today.
Awesome. We've got some cool stuff to talk about with cool people. First time ever on the show, Cody Toombs from AndroidPolice.com. You're like the APK teardown guy at Android Police these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's it feel to be the king of the teardown?
The AP king?
The AP king, yeah.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of sleepless nights and, yeah. But it's good stuff. It's always fun to dig around in other people's work.
Yeah, and see what little Easter eggs they've left behind specifically for you and others who do what you do, as far as that's concerned. Google's very known to do that, right? Do you find a lot of weird stuff hidden about?
I've found even a couple messages written specifically to me. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Excellent. They're listening. They know. That is awesome. Cool. Well, it's great to have you on. I've met you the last few years at Google I/O. Are you going this year to Google I/O?
Yeah, I'm going to be down there the whole time. Looking forward to it. I missed last year. But I was there the 3 years before that, so it was a great time there. I'm looking forward to being back.
Bring sunscreen.
Yeah, definitely going to need some sunscreen.
Will do.
It's a different situation entirely, being at Shoreline versus what you were used to the few years prior in San Francisco. It's not bad. It's not necessarily bad. It's just different. So you're gonna have a lot of fun. It's like a party, and then somehow they figured out how to get developer talks in there, for better or for worse.
Developing is fun.
Yeah,
it is.
It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Wait,
what?
You're saying I/O wasn't already kind of a party?
Well, it was, but it was
at the Moscone Center. It's not party. Moscone is like business.
At least when you're at Moscone, you can pretend like it's not a party and that you're there for business. When you're at Shoreline, it's like you basically expect like Red Hot Chili Peppers to be walking amongst you while you're walking through there. You know,
that would be great to see Flea just walking across in an I/O shirt.
It could happen. Although, didn't Red Hot Chili Peppers already do the I/O performance thing? Or no, I'm thinking of Jane's Addiction. I'm thinking of Jane's Addiction. So. Anyways, we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to be discussing how Google Docs went fishing, a look at Fuchsia, You can AI yourself with kits from Google. The teeny tiny jelly phone that I totally ordered. I can't wait to get it. What it's like to tear down APKs. We thought we'd talk with Cody a little bit about kind of the experience of pulling APKs apart and taking a look at them and all that kind of stuff in the app section. But Brian, I hope you're ready because it's time to get to a little news first.
Happy, happy birthday to Ron and Flo, but we've got a present for you. And it's called Android News.
Diddy keeps...
You put a big smile on my face, Brian. I just want you to know.
Aw.
Go ahead and turn up the audio real quick if you can, Brian. I prepared something.
What's going on over there?
I prepared something for Ron and Flo with Diddy. I don't know if you have this ready, but... You know, totally top-notch happy birthday song for you, courtesy of
Diddy. Oh, that's great. Thank you for the giggle, Jason.
It just played a second time. Sorry about that. All right, now to the news. Now that you've been blanketed with happy birthdayness,
yes,
it's time to get to the news. Google announced that the beta program for Nougat, or Nougat, as Ron likes to say these days, is officially over. Of course, obviously, we have Google I.O. right around the corner. Google's preparing for the Android O beta release beginning mid-May. The alpha version was already released back in mid-March. That required a manual download. So those who were really eager to get on the O train, if that's what it's called, had to jump through some hoops to get there. And now it'll be more of like an automatic sense. You can opt in the way you've been able to do for Nougat beta. You can do that on the Nexus 5X, the 6P, the Player, the Pixel, and the Pixel XL. I still have not spent time with O to any degree because I don't know. I didn't want to like overwrite my Pixel with O.
Fear.
Fear, which is unlike me. Usually I'm just like, let's go, and I just jump right in and I deal with it. Cody, have you played around with O? Have you been exposed to kind of some of the new features of O, and what do you think of what you've heard?
I've been using it a lot with especially like app updates. I'm always checking, especially for notification channels. Almost every new Google app is including code for notification channels. Not all of them have activated it yet, though. So there's a lot of stuff I'm looking into, but I'm not using it on like a primary phone. I'm using it on my 6P, which is kind of at this point like semi-retired.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm not going to throw a main device at like beta alpha level software.
Not even when the beta happens and it's more of an automatic kind of happening behind the scenes sort of thing. That was kind of my, that was my level where I was like, okay, at that point, I'll just make sure everything's backed up. I'll just jump in and I'll deal with it.
No, if I have to, I'll do that. But for the most part, I want to keep my Pixel running on the current stable track. And I've got another phone that's my, like personal carry phone. So the 6P, it's still supported. It's still going to be getting all of them. So I'm not going to take that risk with it.
It's because you want to use the Pixel, right? Because it's such a great phone. Yeah. Why would you put some alpha software on it? You want to use it and have it work every time.
Exactly. And to be fair, the 6P, I've run into a lot of problems with apps crashing.
Oh, you are not the only one.
Yeah.
That phone.
So notification channels, by the way. So I have not played around with that, but you're seeing a lot of code kind of pointed at it, not active. I imagine in some apps it probably is active. Like, what do you think? Is that like the standout feature of O based on what you've seen?
I don't want to call it the standout feature necessarily. There's a lot of really good stuff in there. But yeah, that's the one that I think most users, like in a year or 2 years when everyone's actually running it, that's the thing a lot of them are going to learn about, and they're going to find that to be their big useful feature.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully, if developers jump on it.
Yeah, I'm curious to check that out and see. Because when I first heard of the news of it, I just kind of went back and forth on it. Like, all right, is this neat because it's new, or is it neat because it's really actually very useful? And I'm still very undecided. So I'm eager to play with it and see how that works. from a usability standpoint to see if it actually kind of improves my flow, because my notification shade gets messy and it's just part of how I live.
Gives me a little bit of anxiety, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, it's part of how I live my Android life is with a messy notification shade, but I use it as kind of like a task list, you know. I don't swipe things away until I'm ready to say that I've actually done that thing. So
my question to you, though, really quick, is how many of those notifications would you actually turn off and never see again?
That's a good question. I mean, there definitely are notifications in there that I would get rid of if I didn't have to see them, because some of them are instant, like I see it and okay, cool, swipe it away immediately. It would have not mattered to my life whatsoever if I had or had not seen that. I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, because so many of the ones that I get, I really would not get rid of. Like, I just want to see them for the second to know they're there. I won't necessarily act on them, just see them. And so I don't think I would really get rid of that many, but there's a couple apps. They have one or two that I'll get rid of.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I agree. Like, I like to see when things are happening. And there's also the task of swiping them away that's kind of enjoyable. But certain notifications come up, like when I've installed something or something's updated behind in the background. Like, I'm at the point with Play Store updates that updates happen automatically that I don't ever need to know that they're happening anymore. It's cool. Just have them happen in the background. I don't need that to cloud my notification shade.
You mean you don't want to freak out over 41 app updates have happened in the background? Because, I don't know, it kind of fascinates me.
Don't need it. I could live my life without knowing that. It's cool. Because then everything's just happening without me needing to do anything. There was a time, man, years ago where I was really obsessive about updating apps and I'm sure we all did this because it was such a new thing, but launching the App Store or the Play Store and going in there specifically to see if there were any new updates on my apps. And there were update, because it was an exciting event. Now I'm just like, just make it happen. I don't want to have to deal with it. So. And by the way, the IO 2017 app is out. They've updated the app anyways, which allows you to reserve seats in sessions, which I've already done. I've reserved many seats, and we'll
see. It's a very good image, by the way. It's a very good accompanying image.
Yes.
I have to poke around at the app and see what.
Fine. Yeah, make your picks.
Yeah.
You don't want to not be there in the Android fireside chat, you know?
I feel like it's, I haven't tried it yet, but I feel like it's picking your seat in an airplane and saying that everything has been taken, all the good stuff.
Wah, wah, wah. Not yet, though. All right, Flo, you got the next one.
Yeah, well, first I want to ask, Jason, did you see any of this in your inbox last week?
The Google Docs phishing email, I did not receive one. No, I didn't get one.
So I did not receive one either. I feel like I was not a part of the party. Cody, did you see one at all?
No.
So we were all left out of this, but if you weren't left out, well, I'm sorry this happened, but last week a Google Docs phishing email did make the rounds. It was looking to be very incredibly convincing. It was coming from addresses that were verified, from people you probably knew, and basically the email would spoof and ask you to open a Google Doc, and when you clicked on it, it would ask you to grant permission to access your email and contacts, and then it would phish all the people in your contacts list because you gave it the right of way to do so without realizing it, of course, because this was a very good attack. So I don't know. I'm glad I wasn't a part of it.
Yes. It's a party that I didn't need to be invited to. I'm pretty happy about
precisely.
That.
but very unfortunate thing to sort of happen, especially considering Google Docs' widespread use, how many people really rely on it. The good news is that Google did actually, this is totally ironic, but Google did write a blog post the same day this happened about what it was doing with its new techniques to look for phishing. And so it's now using the safe browsing for both Chrome and Play Store to kind of help with weeding out those bad guys.
From Gmail for Android. Yeah, which is feature
to
bring
in. For Android.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was very interesting to see how this whole email, this phishing email happened, because it was a third-party app, obviously, that was able to name itself Google Docs. And by all accounts, like if you didn't notice the email address that was in the header of the email that you received and you just clicked to go through to grant permission, you probably would have missed it. There was one other place that you could have seen if you clicked on a developer name or whatever. It would have pulled up information that would have clued you in that this was not legitimate. But they had brought in – I mean, they had done pretty basic stuff, right? They named it Google Docs. They brought in the Google Doc icon. And you actually go through Google's official – kind of process of granting permission, which is something that we do on Android all the time, right? We install a new app, you grant permission, or whatever the case may be, you go through Google setup and it gives you that little window and it says, do you grant this app permission to gain access to your inbox and, you know, your contacts as well. And so in passing, it would be very easy to be fooled by it if you didn't do what this person is doing right here and click on Google Docs, and then you'd see this Eugene Gmail guy and you go, okay, that's not Google Docs, or if that's Google, they did something wrong. So it was just kind of surprising that this was, and see, you see here, you've probably seen this window before, allow or deny permission to these things, and it says Google Docs would like to. It's very easy to look at that at a glance and think that it's legitimate, but it's not. So just goes to show how easy it is to fall for this stuff. Someone in chat was saying, I think this was a big issue because, or this was a bigger story because journalists were involved, because journalists were hit. Was it bigger because of that, or would it have been a big issue regardless? I think it would have been a pretty big issue if it was hitting a lot of people.
Yeah, I think people would have been contacting other people, at least via Twitter. But I saw a lot of people in my own little feed saying that they had received the email, which is why I felt left out of the party, quite frankly.
Aww, it's okay.
But thank you for not fishing me. I appreciate it.
Don't fish me, bro. Next time. There will always be a next time when it comes to fishing. This is very interesting. This is a fuchsia. A little more than a year ago, Google began work on an open source operating system project called Fuchsia. We actually first kind of started hearing about it last August. Ron Amadio at Ars Technica detailed the progress of Fuchsia based on Kyle Bradshaw. Actually, earlier today on Tech News Today, we interviewed Kyle Bradshaw. He's the guy that actually decided to dive in and take what was in the public repository on GitHub and do something with it and see how far Fuchsia has come over the past 9 months. So we talked to him on TNT. You can check that out if you like. But it's kind of an interesting glimpse into, I don't know, do you think, Cody, that Fuchsia is the beginnings of a replacement for Android? That's what a lot of people seem to be thinking, or at least kind of veering in that direction. What do you think?
You know, Google is really good at not to play into the really annoying meme that's kind of gone around, but Google is very good at starting multiple projects that might occasionally overlap, or sometimes a lot overlap.
Yeah.
And, you know, this looks really promising. If it's as fast as it's supposed to be, then there's a lot of reason why that would be a good replacement for Android, because you can kind of look back at what happened with Windows Mobile back in the day. Mm. And it was a great mobile operating system for its time, but it wasn't designed to be fast. It wasn't designed to have good animations. It wasn't designed for all the things that the iPhone would later come along and completely eat its lunch on. So, you know, Android has a couple of these performance issues that they spent years trying to fix, and now we're kind of crossing into that line where some of them might not really be easy to fix, or maybe can't be fixed without major overhauls. Fuchsia could be a great way to solve that.
Obviously, starting from the ground up and having to build it, that's no small feat when you've built the behemoth that is the Android operating system, and how successful that has become over the years, just dominating the market, the smartphone market by number of devices and all that. I suppose they've got to start somewhere. It's so curious to me. Like, I mean, and yeah, Google does a lot of their stuff in the open. They're very dedicated to open source in a lot of different ways, but so curious to me that if this is that project, if it's that as major as this is the project that we think at some point could actually replace Android, it's happening all out in the open and they're really not talking at all about it. So on one hand, you see everything that they're doing, but on the other hand, you have absolutely no idea what it means. And it's just such a curious project from that perspective. But the system UI called Armadillo is written with the Flutter SDK. Fuchsia is based actually on Google's own microkernel called Magenta, not Linux like Android is based. But Kyle was able to preview pieces of the OS on an Android device because Flutter SDK is cross-platform. So wrap your mind around that a little bit. That's why you end up seeing what you've seen if you read Ron Amadio's piece or went to Kyle's site and saw kind of what he put together there. But interesting, like there's a little bit of material design implemented in there, or the basics, the very basics of it anyways. It's totally bare bones, but you can kind of see how this new vision is evolving. And I'm very interested to see how long it takes to get to a point to where we finally realize what it actually is and why it exists.
I think it's interesting just pointing to the notes here. The Google documentation includes references to modern phones and personal computers with fast processors, lots of RAM and peripherals.
So kind of like an OS for everything is what it makes it sound like, right?
I could picture this becoming a laptop OS too.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
So one other little thing, and I know most people won't really care about something like this, but this is coming from my programming background.
Yes.
They're focusing on using Dart as the primary programming language. And this is something I've kind of had in the back of my mind for a while. I've had an editorial I've been meaning to write for about a year and a half. And I think Google is going to do a lot of pushing with Dart in the very near future. Same with the Go language. Both of them, I expect to get a lot of attention.
Explain, for those of us not developer privy. Inclined, privy to your background, why is that important? What is the takeaway as far as why it's important that Google would focus more on Dart as a platform?
The biggest factor is ownership. There's a lot of reasons behind it, but to me, ownership is going to be the big one, because when you look at it, almost every company that has a platform, they have their own language, a language that they own, that they designed from the ground up, and they control it. Apple spent years with Objective-C, which they didn't, that was not theirs to begin with. They took it from somewhere else and built upon it. And now that they have Swift, they're really in control of their destiny on this one. And they've owned Objective-C long enough that they pretty much were in control of the destiny on that too. Microsoft has C#, and their entire .NET platform. Google has been stuck on Android and Java on Android. And they've had issues with Oracle, both legal and technical. They're getting caught up in a lot of Java's old design There's so many reasons to step away from that if they can. And that's a risky thing to say, because there's so many Java developers that love Java and they don't want to leave that behind. But there's a lot of reasons to introduce another language.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, there's so many more questions than answers with Fuchsia. So obviously early on, but you too can install this on your Android device if you like. You can go to
if you want to be brave.
Kyle posted the SDK on his site, so you can check it out there. And what is that hot? I suddenly lost the link to this hotfix.net. That's it. Go to hotfix.net and you can find the APK, and you know, use your judgment on this, but you can play around with what is there anyways right now with Fuchsia and see what you think. We got an email.
This one's from Nick from New Zealand, and he's actually responding to last week's show when we were talking about Amazon Underground, the app that is going kaput. So Nick says, I have an app that's been on Underground for about 2 years called Taxi Pro. The same app has been on Google Play, although in two different versions due to the first one being a Honeycomb exclusive. And within the relatively short amount of time it's been on Underground, I've actually gotten more money than the time it's been on Google Play. The downside is the experience. Pushing updates to my app on Underground is a horrible and messy experience, which means the Amazon app is actually a few versions behind. The community of users also seem less engaged. I get emails from users of the Google Play app all the time with suggestions and acknowledgement. I get none of that from my underground users.
Hmm.
Ouch.
Interesting.
Yeah.
More feedback from people on Play. I mean, maybe more passive users on Amazon, on Amazon Underground, right?
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. Like, if you're using an Android phone and you've got your Google account built into everything and you're not interested in the Amazon ecosystem, you're right. not going to download apps from them, which I don't. But I leave right. ratings on Google Play. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know what I think, put it in the Google Play Store.
Makes more money on the Android side. I wonder why that is. I wonder if that I doubt that translates to every app. There's probably certain apps that work much better on the Amazon Underground free based, you know, or paid based on the amount of time the user uses the app model versus the upfront purchase price that's on the Play Store. But none of that matters because Underground's going away. That's the end of that one. So,
Jason, we have a Ron update.
What?
We have a Ron update that he got.
No way. Team. That's awesome. Achievement unlocked. Ron says just took 40 years. He got happy 40th birthday, Ron Richards, on the Mets board. Yay. At the Mets game. I can only imagine how happy Ron is right now for this to have happened.
I'm so happy for Ron.
That is awesome. Got that update on Instagram here. Who put that in? Thanks for putting that in, Brian. That's awesome. That is fantastic. Let's get your name up on the board next, Flo, okay?
Okay.
We'll work on that. While we take a break, we need to thank a sponsor of today's episode, and that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is perfect for if you are looking for a qualified candidate for a job that you have. If you're hiring, you're going to need to know where to post your job to find all of the qualified candidates that are out there, of which there are many, and they're all over the place. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. Just one place isn't enough. You want to find the perfect hire for your position, you need to post your job on all of the top job sites. And with ZipRecruiter, you can do that. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites, including social media networks. Everybody's on those. Facebook, Twitter, of course, all with a single click. You find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. You just post one time and you'll watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy to use interface. No more juggling emails, no more handling those calls to your office. You quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And one more time, to try for free, all you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit to check it out for yourself. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of All About Android. All right, we've got some pretty cool hardware stuff to talk about. Let's do that.
So I've got some exciting hardware news for people who are really excited. I think it was last week. Was it last week when they announced Assistant?
The SDK? Yeah, that was last week or the week before. Yeah.
It was recently.
It was last week. You're right. Last week.
Yes, it was last week. So anyway, Google has partnered up with Magpie Magazine, which is the official Raspberry Pi magazine, to offer artificial intelligence yourself kits. Basically like DIY, but this is AIY. That's a new terminology. Time to adopt that.
Yeah.
So this magazine comes with the whole voice kit that you need. It turns a Raspberry Pi 3 into an assistant box utilizing the Google Assistant SDK. It includes a voice hardware accessory on top or a nicely named hat. Connectors, dual mic, speaker, power supply, and an arcade-style button that you hit to prompt the voice query. And this is all encased in a cardboard box housing. Now, I just have one comment to say about this, and that I am so excited to see that people are packaging things with magazines again.
Yeah, I know, right? Meanwhile, this isn't just like packaged with a magazine. It comes in a box attached to the magazine. This is no small piece of kit. Are you a maker, Cody? Do these kind of kits interest you at all?
So I'm not skilled with electronics, but I do have a little bit of knowledge. I had to do a bit in college, and I have a few projects I want to work on. This is appealing. I want to get one of these just so I can mess with it, but I don't have anything like right off the bat I could do.
Yeah. I mean, basically you end up making this box. It's like this little cardboard box. They give you all the things you need to do. And I guess you flash, you have an SD card. So you have to flash the ROM onto the SD card the way you usually do with a Raspberry Pi project. You put it all together in the cardboard box. On the very top of the box is the arcade button. So instead of being voice cued, voice prompted, it's not always listening, but you go over and with a satisfying slap of the button, that's like the cue to prompt you for your assistant command. So it's kind of like a Google Home, Amazon Echo sort of thing, but a little bit more manual and made out of cardboard because that's what Google does.
I want us to interview the first person that puts that kit inside a BattleBot.
A BattleBot.
And then it programs the BattleBot to do like, I don't know, some sort of choreographed like hit move.
Yes.
I just came up with a great idea.
That's a really great idea. Maybe we could get three or four buttons, and it could be a sequence of buttons triggers a certain special move that the BattleBot can perform. The problem with that idea, though, Flo, is that you, as the operator, are standing right in front of the robot entering the code, which means you're probably the target of the move once you're
well,
done.
Well, no,
right?
No. It's like Pokemon, Jason. So what you do is you press the button on the robot and you tell it to do the move, and then it goes forth and beats up whatever's. Sorry,
but you got to get out of the way.
Yeah. Well, but it won't attack me. I'm the parent.
Oh, okay.
Of the AI.
You need
right?
to implant a chip in yourself or something so that it knows that.
Yes. I'll have it with infrared so it can see my body. Well, I'm going too far into it.
Good. No, I think this is important.
Just teach it the three laws.
Yes, exactly.
Precisely.
That's all you have to do.
Yes.
And I'm sure this is exactly what Google had in mind when it released the Assistant SDK last week. So BattleBots. It's bound to happen. Sooner or later, somebody's going to do it. This next story, I got really excited about this. I started to read up on the Jelly, which is it's a Kickstarter project, basically. If you like small phones, then this is totally for you. 2.45-inch LCD display, quad-core 1.1 gigahertz processor of some sort, 8-megapixel rear-facing camera. The cameras are not very impressive, by the way, but I'm sure you assumed that. Micro SD card, dual SIM, 950 milliamp hour battery. Not very much battery, but then again, not very much power. It fits into the coin pocket of your jeans. That's how tiny
gosh.
This thing is.
So I ordered this also, by the way, I just want to say.
Oh, you did? Awesome.
Yeah, after I watched Mr. Mobile's review of it. So it was just too good to pass up. I mean, it's so cute.
I mean, we're just so used to big, big, big phones. Now we're going in the opposite direction. Yeah, there's a special upgrade that you can get for the gym attachment for your arm.
Guys, we're quiet because the video is just showing us the phone, and the phone is so cute. You're so mesmerized by its cuteness. I mean, it's like the Furby of Android smartphones without the annoyance, maybe.
It is. So, Cody, where do you stand on the realm of big phone versus small phone? I mean, this is ridiculously small phone, obviously. The phone is hardly bigger than the connector that you use to charge it. But where do you stand? Does this fill a niche, a need out there?
Okay, so for walking around, I'm pretty much always going to take the big phone. I can do more with it. I'm going to want to do more with it. But what I love about these phones, and I've been saying this for so many years, is this is something you take when you go snowboarding or when you go out in any situation where you're like, you know what, I need to have a phone with me, but if something happens to it, I don't mind having a phone that this is what, $80? Was that...
$80 for the
For $80. Okay, you don't want to lose it, but if you go up on a mountain and it something happens, it falls in the snow, gets lost, or water gets into it and destroys it, whatever, $80, I can live with that. as a loss. I don't want that to happen to an $800 phone. So I think these are great for that purpose, as long as like reception is good.
Yeah.
I love this as a travel phone. Just like something small that doesn't distract me from my trip, that I can still have, like, I can still have the internet and the apps that I need to use. Cause one of the reasons I want a smartphone and service is because I want to utilize all the apps that make travel and, you know, going to a new country or even a new state, like, a lot easier. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a really good, actually, now that I think about it, a really good portable music device.
That's true.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's probably slightly larger than the old school iPods, or maybe even smaller than the old school iPods, but it has network capability and it's ridiculously inexpensive, and you can put a SIM in it for when you're out and about. You know, like, just for having play music synced to it, that's actually, now that I think about it, it would make a really good gym device. It's really small, you know, like,
I
bring the S8 Plus to the gym, or I bring the Pixel XL to the gym.
No,
and I do
big.
It because it's my phone and I'm too lazy to like swap for another phone or whatever, but it's so big, like it falls out of my pocket or whatever. And I don't do the strap on the arm thing. I just don't do that.
And then you put it on the floor and it's picking up all the germs at the gym.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I do find one little issue, and it's, maybe this is a stupid issue, maybe not, but I feel like the thing stopping this from being a good travel phone is the camera.
Yeah.
The camera is so mediocre, and if you're traveling with it, yeah, exactly. But if you're traveling with it, you want a good camera. If they kept all the same specs otherwise and just swapped in something that's pretty good. Yeah. It's a thick enough phone. It could take a good camera with lens. That would work. That would be my one catch.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes sense, actually. The camera on this is not that impressive. So even though they touted in the Kickstarter thing that because it's small, it makes a really good selfie cam. And, you know, it's like two people together, like, I'm like, yeah, just because it takes a picture, it doesn't mean it takes a good picture. But super inexpensive, Nougat out of the box. So there you go. Keeping up on the Nougat. So that's a good thing.
That was a selling point. That's why I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. Let's just get it and see what it's like.
I mean,
maybe we'll use it and see what it's like using a, can have a little diary.
Yeah, we can pretend, we can relive that Zoolander scene.
This is a phone for ants.
You got the next one, Flo.
I do have the next one, and the next one is about Asus announced the Zenfone 3 Zoom today, kind of randomly out of the blue. It's now available for $329. It's got a mid-range camera, huge battery. So inside we've got a Snapdragon 625 processor. It's got a 5.5-inch 1080p AMOLED display, 3 gigs of RAM, 32 gigabytes of storage, and a whopping 5,000 milliamp battery. Also, yeah, so that's giant. One of the biggest batteries out there thus far. But I also want to add that it has dual camera on the back. But kind of annoyingly, it's got marshmallow at launch.
Wow.
Which, for $329, I'm not entirely sure that I like that. Considering how far we are along with Nougat.
Yeah. I mean, they promise an upgrade to Nougat, but, you know.
Yeah, but
you
there's
know.
A... I mean, it's got a big battery.
I know. Well, that's the thing. I think that and the dual camera on back, it was just showing there, 1.7 aperture, which, I mean, that sounds pretty nice. I think the dual camera in this case is meant for Zoom as opposed to the kind of rack focus or whatever. Effects that you can get on other ones. Maybe you can do that on this one, but I know that part of how they implemented it is for Zoom capabilities. So that's nice. I like that on a dual camera technology. But so you're getting it for the battery or you're getting it for the camera. Obviously, it's right there in the title, Zoom, in the Zenfone 3 Zoom. So not a bad little announcement. Cody, any thoughts? Is this your next phone? Probably not. Guess
well, you know, I wouldn't say no to Asus if they wanted to maybe send one to me, you know.
Okay.
But but no, I'm not probably going to be rushing for it.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money. Sorry.
You could buy like
low. It makes me a little. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like that. It's just doesn't seem okay.
With marshmallow? Oh, I hear you. You get four jellies for the price of one Zenfone 3 Zoom. The economy's a scale right there. Okay, so I'm going to admit right now, I have had zero amount of minutes. Well, okay, maybe 1 minute with the Samsung Dex,
okay,
which I have here.
On
the-
I'm sitting back. I'm getting ready to experience.
This is the Samsung Dex. So this is the kind of plug and play hardware, desktop device that allows you to plug your Samsung Galaxy S8 or S8 Plus into the bottom and then turn your phone into a desktop PC, or so Samsung says. I can't see it on my preview monitor. I don't know why it's out here, but you have it, Brian. It's up there. And apparently at some point I fired off Assistant. But this is the desktop of my S8 Plus. And I'm afraid to really do anything because I've not played around with this at all. But I'm going to go to places.
That dock, by the way, was that okay? Can you see what you're talking about?
Yeah, I can see everything now. I can see everything. Yeah, don't worry.
No, you're doing this blind.
I can see it right here. It's not
make it
deal.
Even more fun.
I know, right? What are you seeing from my phone? That dock, man. Look at that.
Do you know what's going on there? Why are those apps chosen? Are those apps on your home screen?
I have no idea. Let's see here. Are they apps on my home screen? They might actually be. This is calendar. I don't think that I have calendar on my home screen.
It might be picking a few default apps and then filling in with the rest from the home screen.
Yeah, or like recents maybe. My device did tell me that I haven't rebooted my phone in 7 days. So maybe these are for my recents.
Okay.
I know.
Oh, that's the point. Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, because I said Diddy in there, which you recently made me a Diddy.
yeah, I know. Is Diddy there?
Oh, my God, yes. What do you do if you lost it?
Let's see here. Let's see what Diddy looks like on the Samsung Dex. Diddy has stopped. Now, for the record, it did that earlier, too. So I don't think that's Dex necessarily.
Totally.
So there it is.
It's just emulating the Android app.
Yeah, it's just windowing the app. Exactly.
Like Chrome OS does with the Android apps now.
I did have the thing where when I first plugged this in, it gave me a security screen, but it allowed me to click to take the iris, take my iris in order to get access. And so that worked for me. It was almost instantaneous, so that was pretty nice.
Nice.
Not really going to dive too much into here because I haven't had a whole lot of time with it.
Totally.
But this is the desktop, and what is
this? Can we see this?
So that's like the multitasking screen.
Oh, okay. There we go.
All right. Interesting.
Wait, does that remind anybody? Okay, am I crazy or does that remind me of Honeycomb?
Kind of looks honeycomby.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
I'm picking up the honeycomb.
Yeah, with the individual screens.
Yeah. Oh, honeycomb. I have a Zoom somewhere. One day we should bust that out on the show and relive old
glory
days.
Yeah, that's a good idea. About the launcher or the app dock?
So the app dock. So that's here. I'm using a mouse, by the way. I'm using the scroll wheel and it scrolls. So everything works. You know, this is meant to be like a portable desktop computing environment based on your Samsung device. Here's my apps and I could load up my game from last week. Let's see how that works. Here, Golf Zero. Some functions may not be supported in Samsung Dex. Kind of expected that. But there you go.
I don't even want to know how you're going to try and play this. I gotta tell you, because I've been doing this on Chrome OS and it's like the most finicking thing ever.
No, this game does not work with a mouse. It's not nearly as awesome with a mouse.
Oh.
I'm not quite as good. Well, anyways, Leo just kind of dropped this on my desk literally like 5 minutes before TNT this afternoon and said, here, show it off on the show. And I have done that. I'm happy to show it off. I just don't know a whole lot about it from personal use. So I'm going to play with this a little bit more. I don't know how much time I'm going to have with it, but it's kind of neat. How much does the Dex run?
It's $169, I believe.
Okay.
I have one too, so I'm going to be using it with you. Maybe we'll figure out. I don't know.
Maybe we can Dex each other. No, that doesn't work. Cody, what do you think? Do you think people want to use their phone as a desktop computing environment? Or does it have a place?
I don't know. Microsoft introduced that, was it a year and a half ago. I'm not really sure anymore.
Continuum,
but they introduced that with their phones, and it seemed like a good idea. I've never actually talked to somebody that had one and tried using it.
Well, it's because nobody was using Windows Phone.
Oh, well, true enough. But I don't know. I think it's a good idea in a way. I just don't want to do that with proprietary like add-ons. I want to be able to go to someone's house where they have like something you can plug universally into. Give me, if I could do this over Type-C USB, that will work. But I don't feel like it makes sense in a dock.
Well, and that's how the DeX works, though. It's through USB-C. That's how this is all possible.
Well, yeah. So there's a USB here. I'll remove the phone from the actual dock here, and I don't know if you can see this, Brian. But
you have to like plug it in essentially.
So I unplug that. That's the USB-C connector down at the bottom there.
And okay, but the dock still probably has something in it.
Oh, for sure.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I mean, if you take a look at the back of the dock, I'll try and not break my phone.
Well, that's a fan to keep the phone cool.
You've got Ethernet. You've got your plugs, your USB plugs for your keyboard and your mouse and everything. HDMI and then power over here. And so I'm sure there's something going on inside here, but I don't know. Did Samsung say that this is running entirely, like there's no extra smarts happening inside here, that it's just video pass-through?
I don't recall.
Yeah, I don't recall that either.
It just sounded like it's possible because of the power of USB Type-C.
DeX, I can probably safely say, is not something that solves a need that I have. That doesn't necessarily mean that somebody out there doesn't want this. Ron really likes this idea because he thinks it's kind of like a futuristic way of thinking about our phones, that our phones can be our computer in the future. But I'm kind of with you, Cody. I feel like the way that we've seen this done before, this isn't the first time that we've seen it. I feel like Motorola had one, or something. And it's always this kind of like proprietary approach, which maybe it has to be, I don't know, in order to make it work. I just feel more comfortable living in a desktop environment on desktop OSs that have been around longer than the last 6 months. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Samsung might not be the best at creating a super usable multitasking desktop environment versus what I'm used to using on like a Mac OS or Chrome. You know, Chrome OS is another example, I suppose, but I don't know. I'm sure it solves somebody's need.
So part of the sales pitch for this is obviously that you carry around your own files, your own, your pictures, your apps, all of that. What if Google made, like, as part of a Chrome OS feature, that you could just plug your phone in and a lot of the apps would just be able to kind of become like portable, almost hop across to Chrome OS temporarily and then become usable? That could be interesting.
That would be the kind of the mythical crossover. I mean, some people were kind of paying that as
something, Cody.
No, I wish. Though, hey, you never know.
I mean, you know, that was kind of the some of the thoughts around what Andromeda might be, if that
ends
up being
so plausible.
Anything.
Exactly.
That it might be kind of the best of both worlds, that it would be an Android that cross, you know, depending on the state that it's in, would either operate an Android as a portable device or turn into, you know, a larger Chrome environment, Chrome OS environment, depending on the device that you're running it on, and have interplay between the apps. And I think that sounds really nice. I mean, it remains to be seen. We've been hearing about this for a few years now, or at least there's been rumors about it. Hiroshi Lockheimer was on the show last year, and he basically said that they are not going to do that. But that's what you'd say if you didn't want anyone to know that you were doing that. So who knows?
Right.
So who knows? But I think that would be really cool.
I like that idea, Cody. That's what got me very excited.
I like that idea too. I love Chrome OS. I think Chrome OS is a great multitasking environment. I use it every week on the show. So I'm sold.
Yeah.
You're getting there.
I've never actually used it.
I had some issues with it today.
With Chrome OS?
Yes. I had to put it down and, you know,
go to the Mac.
I was like, yeah.
Oh, you didn't have to kill it when you say put it down, right?
I didn't kill it.
Okay, good. It's like, man, don't overreact, Flo.
I put it on the ground, and then I picked up another laptop.
Set it down and move over to something a little more capable. Precisely. Cody, you've not used Chrome OS?
No, I haven't, which is sort of awkward because I dead serious. I have over my shoulder an original Google Pixel is still in the box, still in cellophane. I have never opened it.
I'm should make money.
I'm about to get hate mail.
No, you're just going to get a weird look for me.
Oh, you should. No. You should dip it in gold. Should dip it in gold and then put it on a little pedestal in your room and it'll be like a trophy.
Yeah. I can understand. This is the original Google Pixel, and I still use it. It was the one that I got at Google I.O. So it's probably the same for you, right? You got that at Google I.O.?
Yep. It is exactly. And if they pushed it so you could run Android apps on that one, I'd have it open the same day that happened. But.
Yeah, it doesn't do that. They did not grant that capability to the first generation Pixel. But I do like it. I still use it, so I must. I should probably upgrade at some point, but it's hard for me to let it. It's hard for me to put it down, as Flo said.
Oh, I didn't put anything down.
Bang. All right, let's take a break and thank a sponsor of today's episode. That's LegalZoom. I'm a big fan of LegalZoom. I've been using them for years, since well before I even worked here at Twit, and they were sponsoring this show, so I'm really happy to have them on the show. There are five things that you can depend on when you use LegalZoom for your business. One, reliability. More than 1 million people have made the smart choice and used LegalZoom to help start their business. Tons of ways that LegalZoom can help you, incorporation, LLCs, nonprofits, and more. They're all finding ways that LegalZoom can help. Two, experience. LegalZoom has been helping business owners of every kind for over 15 years. They have a lot of experience in this realm. Three, helpful support. LegalZoom's US-based team of customer service professionals is always just a click or a call away. You can talk to someone if you need to. When you're running a business, sometimes that's just the best approach. Four, legal advice. LegalZoom isn't a law firm. So instead, they built a network of independent attorneys who can review contracts, interpret employment laws, and help you navigate through the legal world, which sometimes you need some big time help navigating that world. And five, no surprises. With LegalZoom, you get upfront pricing, customer reviews, and a satisfaction guarantee, complete transparency. See how LegalZoom can help you start and run your business. All you have to do is go to LegalZoom.com right now to check it out for yourself. Don't forget to enter AAA at checkout for special savings. That's LegalZoom.com. Make sure to use the offer code AAA, and we thank LegalZoom for their support. And so do I. Appreciate you guys being on board. All right, it's time to go to apps. As if apps was a place that you visited.
Apps Planet.
Apps Planet or Apps Home. So before we get into a few of these things, Cody, you are the teardown guy for Android Police.
The APK.
The APK teardown guy. Yeah, which APK means King. You are the AP King. You're always looking for those clues that Google. I mean, is it just primarily Google, or are you tearing down other apps as well?
Yeah, for what I do, I pretty much exclusively watch Google's apps. But we do on a fairly regular basis. Something will come up in the news, and I might go check out the latest version of Twitter to see if, like, confirm if some rumor is true or. One thing that I've actually done quite a few times is I'll look into apps that have been accused of, like, scamming or malware. There was a rumor, I want to say about 4 months ago, that WhatsApp, at least I think it was WhatsApp, was doing something really shady. And I went digging through that and completely debunked the theory. It was very obviously somebody making up something just to create conflict. So I go through a lot of other stuff, but the writing itself is pretty much centered on Google Apps right now. That's not going to stay that way forever, but hint, hint. But yeah, it's mostly Google for now.
Got it. How did you learn to do this? Like, is it a complicated process to tear apart an APK and take a look? Are you scanning through, or are you doing search queries that usually return something that's meaningful and interesting? How are you doing that?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's if there's a tool out there to use, I'll probably find some way to put it to the test. For the most part, the average app, what I'm doing is just extracting the resources, decompiling the code, and looking for things that have changed. That's if you read the articles, you can usually kind of tell that's what I'm going after. Mm-hmm. But whenever I see even the smallest clues, a lot of times I'll go digging in deeper. I test it on devices. I'm usually using whatever I can to try to find changes in the apps. And it is both tearing down, looking for future changes, things that are going to be coming in the at some future update or Google might remotely enable. And then I'm also just looking for new changes in the apps. So, I mean, I'm sure you've seen, we cover mm-hmm. both the teardowns and just the updates themselves. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's digging around for whatever I can find.
And are there ever like those aha moments where you go diving, you find that secret and you're able to trigger it or something along those lines and get some sort of a big payoff? And it's like, this is why I do this. You ever had that moment?
Every few weeks.
So, all right. So pretty frequently, not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things. You don't always know what you're going to find. Yeah. And there's a lot of really cool stuff that'll turn up. And sometimes like I'm really excited to tell people, hey, this new feature, it's going to be in Photos someday and you're going to love it. Like, this is something you're going to show your family.
You're going to love it.
Those are things you want to write about. Like yeah. It's positive. It's cool. And then one of the weirdest ones, because it wasn't so much about the apps, but it was about the OS. I stumbled across the thing everyone will remember at the time was the round icons that ended up becoming a part of the Pixel launcher.
Yeah.
Alongside that, I also found the like rebirth of app shortcuts. And that was one of the features I thought was super cool in that was what M when it first appeared, and then it got taken out. Mm-hmm. And then when it reappeared and in, wait, am I mixing that up? Maybe it was beginning of N in the developer previews and then it came back. I'd have to look again. Anyway, when I saw proof that that was coming back, it's like, okay, this is great. I don't know that it's going to get a lot of use, but I love this feature. I'm happy to see it coming back for real.
What a kind of a, I don't know, lead time do you have on some of these things? Like, I have to imagine there are clues. I mean, it probably varies depending on the feature in the app, but there had to be some clues that you've been tracking for a very long time. And it's like, I know this is going to happen someday. It hasn't happened for a very, very long time, but it's not going away. It's definitely going to happen. Are there any of these that you've found that you're still tracking and waiting for something to materialize out of them?
Yeah, I've got notes a mile long for so many different apps. So yeah, I'm always watching for random things. The round icons, actually, I didn't even think much of that for probably the first few weeks. But as one new app update kept coming out after another, it's like, wait a second, each of these seems to have round icons. These aren't just fabs. This is not just a coincidence. There's something here. And once I started putting it together, it's like, oh, wow, okay, I can tell what's about to happen. And when Calendar came out and had the dynamic date icon thing, like that was the big tip off. Like, okay, we know what's coming.
Right.
So you're a detective of apps. Yeah. That's what you are. You sniff out the trail and you follow the leads. What are other cliches?
Well, you know, call it forensic analysis. I mean, this is that's overplaying it a bit. That's definitely overplaying it, but it's along those lines. You know, you look for whatever clue you can find and something will turn up.
Right on. Cool. Let's talk about some of these things that you found. Flo, you got this one.
Yeah. So first up is notification channels for Android O.
In the Google phone app.
Yeah, for the phone app.
Sorry about that. Yes, notification channels for Android O and the Google phone app.
Yeah, and you know, that one's kind of on the simple side. It's we were talking about notification channels earlier, obviously, but they're going to parse out the notifications pretty tightly for incoming calls, outgoing calls, missed calls, voicemails, external calls, and miscellaneous, which is obviously whatever. But that's neat. They're actually going to let you decide, hey, you know what? I never care about seeing a notification for an outgoing call. That doesn't need to be sitting in there. and, you know, get rid of it. You don't need it.
That's a good point. So, yeah, I actually just thought about that as you said that. That's right. Why do I? Well, anyway, go ahead.
No, yeah, you know, and the phone app is, it doesn't have a lot of notifications beyond those five that are listed right there. And you only see voicemails and missed calls most of the time. So you probably don't even care about the others. But hey, you know, it's a good model for what notification channels could be. Like, that's what developers should be following, is if you can parse it out to a different channel, do it.
Yeah.
So right. What about this post-call messaging? Go ahead.
That one, and obviously some of these go a little bit more guesswork on how they're going to work. This one, I'm not totally sure how it'll play out, but it looks like it's one of those things where you're going to make a call to somebody, and if they send you to voicemail or don't answer, whatever happens, or maybe it only happens if they like send a text to you as a reply. I'm not really sure how, but you'll be able to send them back a message, or maybe not back, but send them a message saying, hey, this is super important, call me back as soon as you can, or you know, it's not that big a deal, just call back whenever. Like, they're pre-written messages that you could just tap, they get sent, and you can go.
And then I also see here there's something for convenient picture messaging, which I guess it sounds like it shows you the picture for an MMS or an RCS inside the phone app instead of having you jump to another messaging app.
Yeah, and that one's even more guesswork because I'm not even sure how the interface is going to look on this. But my theory is the idea behind this, like when you're on the, let's say you're on the phone with your wife or husband or a friend, whatever, you're walking through a store and you see something that maybe you might want to buy for the house. It instead of like fiddling around with the phone, trying to switch apps, you just hold it up, snap a picture, send it to whoever. And it would send, presumably, I'm guessing it would send it to whoever you're on the phone with, and they'd be able to see it right away. Like, that's, it's fast. It's fewer taps. That's kind of just an awesome way to have a conversation. So that's what I think this is going to be. And there was more evidence than the couple of strings that I put in there, but that's how I picture it making sense.
I think that's actually pretty valid, just thinking about the clunkiness of switching apps to be able to send somebody a picture message when you're on the phone with them. Although I can't do that because I'm on Verizon and they won't let me do that.
Oh, they don't have, right. Is that still an issue? I knew that was an issue a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it is. And sorry, this is slightly sidetracking, but I just want to add, the big issue is when you're using GPS and somebody calls you and the GPS stops working and you're in the middle of a phone call.
Really?
Yeah,
I had no idea. I thought they switched LTE.
Yeah, I don't know why, but for me, it like makes me sweat, and I've had to tell people like, I need to get off the phone with you because I'm in the car driving. Anyway,
that's not good.
Total digression.
No good. I think what I'm finding pretty interesting talking to you about all this stuff, Cody, is that it's not just that you're taking the APKs apart and analyzing code. You also have to do a lot of thought about what this could possibly translate into in the long run. You're estimating based on these clues that you find what this means for Google's business plan, what it means for their you know, ideas around how much control and power these apps have over the device, potentially how this gets worked into some sort of a usable user interface. I mean, you have to make a lot of really interesting kind of informed, I don't know, guesses, guesstimate a lot about what this actually all means. Do you ever hear from Google with either a thumbs up or a thumbs down or a, wow, you got that one, good job?
Yeah. I've heard, I'm not going to say it's common, it's certainly not, but I've had a number of Googlers tell me, either like you nailed it, you got it, good job, or thanks. A few of them have very seriously come to me directly and said, thank you, we're really glad that you do this because it's sort of our way of putting something out there and even judging like community response. If people come along and hate something, then they'll be like, well, maybe we should rework this.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a way for them to sort of put it out there without going through like PR channels or even necessarily building a whole feature and having them like test it out with groups, because sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Like YouTube has had a few issues where they push features and it didn't really play well with users. And sometimes if you can just see like conceptualized a feature, or something conceptualized in an article, it makes more sense that way first, and you can sort of play it out that through that meme.
Yeah, right. Oh, fascinating. So you also have one that you posted a couple of days ago anyways about the Play Store. What I'm interested in here is any kind of movement with instant apps. I feel like instant apps was a Google I/O, you know, big talking point from last year. And then haven't seen a whole lot. There's a little bit of a rollout, but that was really about it. What can you tell us about how that looks to be integrated into Play Store?
Well, we already know that there's going to be some support for it in the Play Store no matter what. That was part of the original sales. Well, I don't want to call it a sales pitch, but that was part of the original concept is you'll be able to click a link, it'll open up an app on your device, and then if you decide that the app is something you want to install, then it'll take you to the Play Store where you hit a button and it'll install, or at least I think it was supposed to take you to the Play Store. Maybe there was a button built in. I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's one of those things that's definitely happening. It's progressing slower than I think the community expected instant apps to happen, but it's moving. It's definitely on a track to happen.
Yeah, and hopefully something at I/O this year could be like, all right, and this is the next phase of it, and we can kind of move into that.
And here are the 15 new partners.
It's in the session.
Yeah. What's that?
That's true.
Instant apps is mentioned in the session list.
Okay, so then they probably have some extra. That's right. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I actually signed up for that talk specifically.
I think I did too. So I'll probably see you there.
Excellent. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, real quick before we move on, this is pretty interesting. If you want to take my camera, because I removed my phone from Dex, you can see that little tiny dot up there.
Yeah.
That's a Facebook chat floating button.
What?
Normally those would be, you know, like normal size hanging out on the side, but because it was in the Dex realm, oh, there it is. I just needed to hold up the phone.
Touch it and move it?
Let's see here. No. Oh, I just moved it. All right, still a little something to work on with the Dex. I'm moving it. Yeah, I'm moving it all around my desktop, apparently.
It looks like it's anchoring to a corner.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a tiny little edge of that screen that's just showing up there. That's
there.
Neat.
Oh, I got it all the way over there now.
So fascinating the way these things are programmed.
Weird. There we go. All right, Flo, you got the last one.
Yeah, so actually, Cody, it looks like we might be seeing the hands-free payment coming to Android Pay after all. I know they were testing that in a really small localized market here in the Bay Area, but I had never been able to use it. It's basically, it's that feature that lets you say, I'll pay with Google. Right.
Yeah. I've never had the chance to use it either. So it's hands on. And I imagine most people probably haven't really heard of it because it didn't get a lot of press after Google's initial, here's a thing that we're doing, we're playing with this, and we're telling you about it now. And then no one really talked about it after that because there wasn't much to say. It didn't change much over the course of the year from what I recall. I was watching as each update came out. I was doing teardowns on the app, and honestly, it just didn't change much. So yeah, it was a neat idea, but
that's really interesting.
Didn't get attention.
Yeah.
So they released a whole app to do the test pilot here, which I mean, they did it in Mountain View, so of course they did it near home base, and I guess they just took it away and now are possibly putting into Android Pay. I don't know. I like the idea of being able to say,
yeah, I do too.
Charge it to my Google account, please.
As long as you know that you can do that, as long as it's rolled out effectively to the point to where you don't have to question whether saying that is just going to make you feel like a jerk.
Well, hold on. It's the new, but it's not because it's, so I got my first debit card when I was 17. And during that time is when they started taking our pictures at Bank of America. They started taking our pictures from the debit card. This is essentially, I think, of like the digital evolution of that. So instead of a physical card, it's like, hi, here's my face.
Right.
I'm going to tell you I'll pay with Google. And then you just show them their phone, your phone. And then it.
You see my face? Trust me.
Yes. Yeah. Well, is this the face of a lion?
Yeah, right.
The thing that I'm curious about and kind of want to see, I don't think a lot of apps are necessarily, I don't think a lot of stores are necessarily going to adopt this, like the camera over the cashier's shoulder. What I'm curious about is if I want to know if some of them are going to adopt a self-pay program using this.
That would be great.
Self-checkout.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
I like that idea. I mean, and I'm sorry to all the cashiers in the world out there, but, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to walk into a restaurant at lunchtime and just go, I'll take the edamame salad and then, you know, move on.
Sometimes it is nice. Sometimes it's more trouble than it's worth.
And sometimes you just want human interaction.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes I just like to talk to somebody. awesome stuff. Let's check out an email. We got an email from Andre who said during episode 315, Andre says, I noticed during the hardware section showing the Samsung S8 that you, he's talking to me, had Evernote installed. Then during the app section, you talked about being embedded with Evernote. I have been an Evernote user for a very long time now, and I was wondering if there is a way of transferring all those notes to a cloud service that we could back our notes up to. Ron did say that there have been issues with Evernote and security, so just in case, I was wondering if this is possible. And I'm embedded in Evernote. It's really hard for me to think about moving away from it just because I have certain systems in place for how I use it, and I don't know. I just don't want to think about, like, pulling the rug out from underneath myself and starting over. But there are ways to move from Evernote to export your data out of Evernote to other places. For example, Microsoft has a tool that does this specifically.
Oh my God, that image. I'm sorry.
I love that too. That's awesome.
Flies flying around the Evernote elephant for audio listeners. Microsoft has an application that you can run that actually imports all the information over into OneNote. And, you know, you have to check into kind of their pricing tiers and everything, which I think are comparable to Evernote's paid pricing tiers. There are ways to move it over to Apple Notes, although I don't know if that's more of a manual process, but it looks like, you know, you can export your Evernote notebooks from Evernote if you want to do it that way. There are definitely ways to do this. I don't know about doing it into Docs easily. If you want to move to like Drive or Dropbox or whatever, like this article actually is from lifehacker.com, which has a number of different ways to do it. And that seems to be using If This Then That, which seems kind of hacky.
Oh, boy.
So it ranges from easy to not so easy, depending on the service that you're migrating to. OneNote might be the safe bet as far as like picking a service that's actually very similar in a lot of different ways.
I love OneNote for what it's worth.
Is that your go-to?
It's my go-to. I've been using it for, I want to say about 5 years now, regularly.
Wow.
I love OneNote. Ugh.
Okay. That's high praise. I wondered about OneNote
too, by the way, like the super original version. So
that was what Microsoft called it, the super original OneNote.
Super original OneNote.
XP premium. Yeah. Cody, what is your go-to of choice in this category?
Oh, gee, it depends on what I'm using it for. Most like short stuff goes into Google Keep. If it's anything longer, I usually just put it in Google Docs. There's not much to it. I used to use Evernote, but I kept having these issues where it would sync and erase old notes, or it had bad conflict resolution, so I just had to stop using it. It wasn't working for me at all.
Oh, man. Yeah. But once that happens a couple of times, you have to ask yourself, you know, how do you recover? How many times has it happened and I didn't realize it and it's gone forever? I've only had that happen once or twice, and it really once it does, man, it kind of rocks your world.
Your heart really pumps.
Well, you wonder what you've lost or what you've potentially lost along the way. Thankfully, I don't think I've lost anything, but I've got.
So you're saying it creates an existential crisis. It's very true.
Pretty much. That's exactly what I was saying, Flo. That's the better way to say it, actually, from what I was saying. So there you go. Hopefully that's a good bit of information on how you can export your data from Evernote to other services. Some easier than others. So there you go. Let's take a minute and thank the sponsor of today's episode, and then we'll get into the arena. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. It was the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's awesome. Mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. You're doing it all by yourself. You're doing it all on your own. And kind of, if you haven't cooked before, it's a great way to learn how to cook. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, as well as pre-portioned ingredients in the box that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. If you spend a lot at restaurants or at high-end grocery chains, well, here it's different. You're going to spend under $10 per person for an awesome meal. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. By shipping the exact amount of each ingredient required for recipe, Blue Apron is reducing food waste. Their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. You can customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences. You can get in there and kind of tweak it. You can choose from a variety of new recipes every week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you with what they have for you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you're never going to get bored here. You get all sorts of options. It's changing pretty much every single week. So for example, 1 week might be baked spinach and egg flatbread with sauteed asparagus and lemon aioli. Another day, beef teriyaki stir fry with sugar snap peas and lime rice. That sounds really good. Crispy salmon and roasted potato salad with pickled mustard seeds and creme fraiche sauce. I'm all over that one. Three cheese and baby broccoli stromboli with tomato and oregano dipping sauce. I think that's right up Ron's alley. he's big into those the pastas and stuff. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/allaboutandroid. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/allaboutandroid. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. All right, with that, it's time to go into the arena for a little bit. Spend some time there, quality time.
But only one lives. Android Arena.
All right.
Okay.
What do we have from last week here? I have what not checked. Have? What do we have? I have to click on this link. Sorry. I'm delayed. Burner. Man, Ron's app won with authority. 50.5% of the votes were for Burner.
Yay.
Yeah, no kidding, eh?
You got number two.
Golf Zero, 19.4%. Second place. Third place, B-Tonal, 18%.
Hey, third is
better. We were very close, Flo. We could have gone either way. True. And fourth place, Lounge Buddy at 12.1%. All right. I'm realizing I'm a little behind on logging into these things so that I can do this quickly and everything, but I think I'm all good now. So that means that Flo, you would be first, Cody will be second, and I will be last. So Flo, I'm surprised this was still open, but we're clear. So go ahead and talk about your app, and I'll show
you. But I'm glad that we get to talk about it. So as you guys know, I like to travel. I like to take trips. I like to take weekend trips. I like to basically... I like to just take a break. When I'm taking a break, I kind of want to know, you know, what's going on where I'm taking a break. So the app I really love to use is TripAdvisor. Now, contrary to popular belief, Yelp is not the end-all be-all travel app because that app is not available in all regions. For instance, in my recent trip to Iceland, Yelp does not, it just is not a thing over there, but TripAdvisor is, and this is how we were able to find restaurants, find things to do, you know, maybe find walks. I love the heck out of TripAdvisor. I've been using this app for so long, and They've been around for 17 years, so it you can trust the sources, you can trust where they're coming from. And I appreciate that the community has been around for so long that you are picking from a mass variety of reviews when you're looking for restaurants. People are very truthful on TripAdvisor as well, which is very good to keep in mind when you're looking for places to eat. And because the community is so vibrant, you'll find that there are a lot of entries with pictures and with reviews and with highlights. You'll also see, the app is made in Material Design. It's got the Hideaway hamburger menu. It's got easy. If you go back one more, it's over there in the corner. The little menu. There you go, where you can log in. And when you log in, you can create lists for future cities that you're going to. You can download cities for offline use. You can even write your review if you just have a really, really bad experience and you want to get it out in the open. I really love TripAdvisor, and I have it installed on every phone that I take with me. So this is definitely a good thing to have in your arsenal if you like to travel.
Nice. Yeah, it's a good community. Great reviews through here. Awesome. Yeah, I was saw it in there. I was like, wait a minute. Are you serious?
Yeah, that's not been in there. Yeah, I've watched it a couple times. Yep. But I mean, every week we think about the apps that we use the most. And I mean, this is an app that I use a ton. I love this app.
Look, there's 62 things to do in Petaluma.
There's got to be more than that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. Lagunitas is in there, though. Although, pour one out for Lagunitas, which is now owned completely by Heineken. Wah, wah, wah.
Oh, the Adobe State Park. I've been there.
Oh, should we write a review? No, we won't do that right now. Excellent. So it's TripAdvisor. If you have not used it, at this point, you've probably used it. But if you haven't, you should check it out. I'm not going to review right now. Thank you very much, TripAdvisor. That is TripAdvisor, all one word. Hey, before we continue on with the arena, I forgot, after announcing who won last week, the check-in with Wade County. Normally Ron does that. You could see how we don't. Uh-oh. Our jobs don't cross very often. So Wade County says, arena through week 18. Ron is in the lead at 53. I'm in second at 51. Guests third at 44. And Flo fourth at 43, still pretty close. Could change in any
way.
Guys,
it's my birthday. Pity vote me.
That could work. That could work, Flo. Nice strategy.
Ron got up on the board.
Yeah, Ron got up on the board at the Mets game. At least the least you can do is give this arena to Flo. All right, Cody, I have your app installed, and I've got it all set up with something as well, so I can show it off. Go ahead and talk about it.
So this is called Wallaby. Really quick, before I say anything about the app, I do want to say I spend so much time with Google Apps, I don't actually get to play with too many others. So this was an interesting prompting to go look into a few others. And I watched last week's episode when Kevin Grant brought up the app that tells you about airport location or airport lounges that credit cards, like as part of their benefits program, get you into.
Yeah, Lounge
Buddy. It reminded me of something I've been dying for ages. And that's what Wallaby does. What it'll do is it takes the credit cards that you have, and you don't have to give it any credit card numbers. You just tell it the type of card that you have. And it takes those benefits and tells you what stores give you the best payback on your rewards program. So you set it up with, let's say you have three or four different credit cards and you look at the local stores surrounding you, and it'll tell you, and right now, do you have more than one card in there? Or is it
I just have one. I only put one in there.
Okay. If you have, let's say I've got an American Express, I've got a couple of Visas. If you put those in, it'll look at those programs and say, this gas station gives you 5% back on your purchase, and that'll be on maybe a city card. And you can go to a grocery store and it might tell you that the American Express gives you 3% back. And ideally these are going to be the highest
that's cool.
Returns on your card. And I've got enough cards, especially Anyone who's ever looked at the Chase Freedom program, you know how terrible that one is. Every 3 months, it changes what you get your benefits back on. So unless you like keeping track of that, you're never going to know. So yeah, the whole purpose of this is it'll clue you in which card you should be using. And it has further features, like I think you can put in the limits and it'll keep track of your spending so you don't like go over limit on a card. At least I know I saw that in the feature list. I'm not using it personally. But yeah, I don't want to try to figure out when I'm in a store. I just want to pull out an app, let the app show me, use this card. And that's the purpose for it.
Man, when I set it up, I'm sorry, I set it up with one card. I was like, cool, I put a card in there. I didn't realize I missed the part about the comparisons between the two. I wish I had done that. That is a really handy handy app to just because you actually, when you're setting it up too, you don't have to punch in a credit card information, you know, your credit card number. You pretty much just select the type of card that you have, and then it kind of brings it into the database, and then it gives you comparison. That's really cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I've only been using it for a couple of days, so I haven't actually had a chance to test it in real use yet, but I love the concept. Like I said, I've wanted this for so long. It's been driving me crazy, and I feel almost kind of dumb I didn't go looking for this sooner.
Yeah, nice. And you can see in here on a per store basis or per shopping basis, you can determine what you want, what's most important to you. Is it that you want to maximize your rewards, or you want to, you know, get the lowest possible interest, make sure that, you know, that this maximize cash flow. It says the card with the longest time to pay new charges. So you can really kind of set your priority on how it chooses the cards dynamically based on what you're using, what you're trying to, you know, find that savings on. That's really cool.
Yeah, and from my description, I'm sure you can tell what I'm interested in. But yeah, it's a multi-purpose app in that way. It's, you nice. Know, if someone needs something different, it's covered.
Nice. That is Wallaby. One word. Wallaby. Wall and then a bee. Excellent. And that is free in the Play Store. And then mine is super quick. I haven't done a wallpaper, and yes, it's a wallpaper app, and they're a dime a dozen these days. However, I kind of like the idea behind this one, because this is the Samsung Galaxy S8 Plus. It has an AMOLED display. It's very pretty and everything. And, you know, one of the things about AMOLED displays is that any of these black areas of the screen aren't actually lit up pixels. Those pixels are basically not lit. Therefore, you're not taxing your battery based on keeping those portions of your screen lit up all the time. So this is an app called AMOLED Minimal, MNML wallpaper. See, they even made the word minimal. And it's basically, it's an app with a gallery of wallpapers that are nothing but wallpapers specifically designed for AMOLED devices, in the sense that there's a lot of black space, there's minimal design, you know, with the colors and the pixels and everything. So it's lighting up more or less, it's lighting up a lot less of the pixels on a regular basis on your desktop than you would get out of most other, you know, wallpapers that you would put there, and every single pixel is lit up. So in theory, that would mean that over time you would get better battery performance when you have your screen on with wallpapers like this, because, you know, half the screen is not lit up at all, or whatever the case may be. They have different, you know, they go to different degrees. As you can see here, this is a very faint gray with a lot of black space. Those would still be considered lit up and everything. So it's not like the lighter or the darker gray is really saving you much, but it's all about all of this black space that it leaves around. And when you go into something and you like it, you just tap the check mark, it applies the wallpaper, and now there I go, it's there. And now whenever I'm on my home screen, you know, that very minimal approach of the wallpaper is hopefully going to save me a little bit of battery over time. And I mean, there's a ton here. You get a huge list of them for free. There is a kind of like an XL version, which is what I have installed here. It's $1.50 normally. I think right now it's on sale for $1. But as you can see, there are tons, so many that it hasn't even loaded them. But I can you know, kind of let it catch up. Hopefully it'll catch up here in a second and you can see some of these other ones. If you like them, you can add them to kind of like your favorites list by tapping the heart, and then they're in a little favorites category and you can apply them as need be. But I mean, aside from the pixel saving aspects of it, I just really like the designs. I like the minimal aspect of, and the kind of color choices and design choices that they use. It's just kind of a light touch. Let's say, ooh, that's cool. I like that a lot. I'll go ahead and tap into that one. Anyways, it's called AMOLED Minimal Wallpapers. It's free, or $1.50 if you pony up for the XL version. And you get a lot of options to hopefully, over the long run, save some battery on your AMOLED device. So there you go. That is it for the Arena. We've got TripAdvisor, Wallaby, AMOLED Minimal Wallpapers. I can't not say it like that because there are no vowels. bit.ly/AAApoll317. bit.ly/AAApoll317. Oh, no. There's something missing from there. Hold on. Let me see here.
The contest is rigged.
Nope. Do not place your vote yet. This is, dang it. This is what I get for setting this up well in advance of the show. I didn't have the app yet. Let's see here. I can do this right now. Flo, tell me a story.
Well, there was an old lady who lived in a shoe, and the shoe was not made of real leather, and then it ended up raining, and the shoe molded, and the woman lived in a moldy house.
Woo! The end. Thank you very much, Flo. We really appreciate your time with that wonderful story. bit.ly/AAApoll317 to place your vote for your favorite app. All three are there, and I will add icons after the show is done. AMOLED, Minimal Wallpaper, Wallaby, yes, or TripAdvisor, which Brian just voted for.
Thank you, Brian.
My plan is foiled. There you go. We'll see how this all works out and check in on it next week as we usually do. But that's it. Cody, thank you so much for finally. We finally got you on, and I really appreciate you taking time tonight to hang out with us. Really appreciate it.
And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell people. So I'm going to, of course, I'm sure we're going to bump into each other at Google I/O next week, and looking forward to that. Tell people what you're going to be working on until then. You got anything in the works?
Well, naturally, I'm always writing at AP. I've got at least one teardown, I think, is probably on the way. And I've got an editorial that I'm going to be hitting shortly that might anger a few people. It might not. We'll see what happens.
Excellent. Right on. And that's at androidpolice.com. You can find all of Cody's work, his handiwork there. And then on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle?
It's Cody_Toombs, and that's Toombs spelled TOOMBS.
Yeah, what worth pointing out. Toombs with an extra O.
Yeah, no one can ever spell it. So.
I know, right? I'm sure it's been something that's followed you around all of your life. But that's awesome. We really appreciate you coming on tonight and talking with us. And I will be seeing you next week at Google I/O. So will Flo. Flo, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. I'm sorry you're under the weather, but stoked to get you on tonight. Are you going to eat some cake once we're done?
I think I'm well enough to try and take a bite of some breakfast donuts.
Okay.
That were brought to me. And I'd really been like thinking, we'll see.
We'll see. All right. Understood.
We'll see.
Understood.
But until then, I mean, you guys know where to find me at androidcentral.com. I mentioned earlier, I have a Dex doc as here as well. I'm going to start firing that up, seeing what it's like. And then next week is Google I/O.
Woo!
It's like here already.
What's that?
It's here already.
It's weird. It's so crazy. I can't believe that it's here already. A lot to look forward to, though. I'm curious to see if Google comes out with its own screened Google Home to compete with the Amazon Echo, whatever it's called.
I don't want them to do that.
They're going to do it. I don't know if they're going to do it at this I/O, but you know they're going to do it at some point.
But isn't that just called your Pixel phone? And you just put it on a dock and go, okay, video conferencing? I'm just saying.
But it doesn't live in your home and stare at you.
Google doesn't have to do it anyway. Someone else could.
Yeah, that's true. That's true with the Assistant SDK. Pretty easy to do. So AndroidCentral.com for all that Flo is working on. And make sure that you wish her a happy birthday on Twitter, too.
Thank you.
Pummel her with happy birthdays. Brian, what about you?
Well, also next week is, I think this next week is Maker Faire. So I just want
to
shout out to Maker Faire because we're going to have a Twit booth on Friday. So if you get a chance, you're in the San Mateo area, come check it out. Say hi to Leo and Padre and me. And I don't know who else is going. I think a few other people, but we'll have projects and stuff that we will have laid out and glad to talk to people. But otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter at @Crinky_Hippo or watch Know How on Twit.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. And yeah, we'll have another moment to plug the Maker Faire with next week's episode. I wish I could make that, but I can't make it, unfortunately. But that should be a lot of fun. So definitely, if you're going to be at Maker Faire, go find the Know How booth. But you can find me at jasonhowell.net, actually, not .com. Sorry, I got that wrong. It's .net. That's okay. Yellowgoldmusic.com, though. That works. And jasonhowell.net. jasonhowell.com. Ooh, I'm very curious now. Who is that?
Wait, so is jasonhowell.net new?
No, jasonhowell.net is my site. jasonhowell.com is Jason Howell Wealth Advisor. I wish that I could do that.
Well, I was going to say it's too bad you can't buy your domain off of him, but that guy.
Yeah, believe me, I've been tracking this guy for years. He's not getting rid of that URL. Yeah. He also ran for Congress. So
oh my gosh.
He's got a rich history. Anyways, jasonhowell.net is where you want to go if you want to find me. If you want to get wealthy, go to jasonhowell.com. Maybe that'll work. But that's it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us an email or video mail, AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We have a subreddit, twitaaa.reddit.com. Throw your favorite stories in there. We pull from that for the show sometimes. Show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find and subscribe to our shows on YouTube, iTunes, Pocket Casts, all over, wherever you find podcasts. And catch us live every Tuesday starting sometime around 5:30 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's it for this week. We'll see y'all next week on another episode, the pre-IO edition of All About Android. Bye, everybody.